ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया वासुदेव परवायदा वासुदेव परामका वासुदेव परयोगा वासुदेव परक्रिया वासुदेव परम ज्ञानम वासुदेव परम तपा वासुदेव परो वासुदेव परो धर्मो वासुदेव परागति वासुदेव परावेदा वासुदेव परामका वासुदेव परायोगा वासुदेव परक्रिया वासुदेव परम ज्ञानम वासुदेव परम तपा वासुदेव परो धर्मो वासुदेव परागति वासुदेव परावेदा वासुदेव परामका वासुदेव परायोगा वासुदेव परक्रिया वासुदेव परम ज्ञानम वासुदेव परम तपा वासुदेव परो धर्मो वासुदेव परागति. Translation. In the revealed scriptures, the ultimate object of knowledge is Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. The purpose of performing sacrifice is to please him. Yoga is for realizing him. All fruitive activities are ultimately rewarded by him only. He is supreme knowledge, and all severe austerities are performed to know him. Religion, Dharma, is rendering loving service unto him. He is the supreme goal of life. So we'll continue with the purport. This is also so for the culture of knowledge. According to Bhagavad Gita, there are 18 items in culturing knowledge. By such culture of knowledge, one becomes prideless, devoid of vanity, non-violent, forbearing, simple, devoted to the great spiritual master, and self-controlled. By culture of knowledge, one becomes unattached to hearth and home and becomes conscious of the miseries due to death, birth, old age, and disease. And all culture of knowledge culminates in devotional service of the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Therefore, Vasudeva is the ultimate aim in culturing all different branches of knowledge. Culture of knowledge leading one to the transcendental plane of meeting Vasudeva is real knowledge. Physical knowledge in its various branches is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita as anjana, or the opposite of real knowledge. The ultimate aim of physical knowledge is to satisfy the senses, which means prolongation of the term of material existence, and thereby continuance of the threefold miseries. So prolonging the miserable life of material existence is nescience. But the same physical knowledge leading to the way of spiritual understanding helps one to end the miserable life of physical existence and to begin the life of spiritual existence on the plane of Vasudeva. Om Agyan Timurandasya Ginangina Shalakaya Chaksudamilitam Jainatasmai Sigurdave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Jainabhutale Shvayam Rupakadamayam Dadanti Svabhantikam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Bhuvanichananda Shivasari Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Hare. So we are continuing with this essential verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, in which it is stated that Krishna, Vasudeva Krishna, is the ultimate goal of sacrifice, of yoga, of fruitive activities, which are rewarded by him, knowledge, austerity, and religion. So what we've discussed, Vasudeva Pada Veda, we've discussed Vasudeva Pada Mukha, it's a goal of all sacrifices. I believe yesterday Prahlad discussed Vasudeva Pada Yoga, that Krishna is the goal of yoga. So Vasudeva Pada Kriya, that's Kriya. Today we'll discuss Kriya. That Krishna is the ultimate goal of, or rather it's stated here, all fruitive activities are ultimately rewarded by him only. So this part of the shloka discusses fruitive activity. So why is this discussed in the Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam, fruitive activity? Srimad Bhagavatam is Amala Purana. There's 18 Puranas. Six Puranas are for those in the mode of ignorance to gradually elevate them. Six Puranas are in the mode of passion to elevate those from the mode of passion to mode of goodness. And six Puranas are in the mode of goodness for the Brahmanas. And then there's Shuddha Sattva. Beyond the mundane mode of goodness is pure goodness. Shuddha Sattva. And this Srimad Bhagavatam, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam, is meant for those who are interested in Shuddha Sattva or transcendence. Spiritual subject matters, culminating in love for Krishna. So why are we discussing fruitive activity, Kriya, Vasudeva Pada Kriya? Why is this subject matter even mentioned in Vedic literatures? Well, it is. There's actually a section of the Vedas which is called Karma Kanda, which deals with this subject matter of fruitive activity or sense gratification. The idea being that if one performs or one engages in sense gratification under the regulation of Vedic injunctions, one can gradually rise beyond it. It's simply not possible for everyone, even for the most, for the general mass of people, to immediately renounce sense gratification, although that is the goal. The definition liberation means that one has actually become detached from all material desires. This is this is called moksha. In Sanskrit, moksha means that one has become liberated. Liberated from what? Liberated from all attachments to this material world. As a certain class of transcendentalists, they think this is the goal. Because they understand, as we all understand, that material attachments are ultimately a source of suffering. Although in the beginning, it appears that sense gratification can give us satisfaction, the end result is something very much different. The end result is what? The end result is lamentation. Hankering and lamenting. We hanker to enjoy sense gratification. We think we're going to get some satisfaction. But the satisfaction is fleeting. It's like the water on the petal of the lotus flower. Sometimes it rains and the water comes on the petal of the lotus flower. It stays for just a moment and then it glides off into the lake. So sense gratification is like that. It's momentary pleasure. And then one is simply left lamenting. We hanker for sense gratification. We enjoy it for only a moment, a flickering moment. Then it's gone. And for much longer, we lament. Mainly we're hankering. We're in a dreamlike state. If I get that sense gratification, if I get it, I get it. We work very hard. The sweat of our brow. We get it. Ah, gone. And then we're lamenting. So the majority of the time we're hankering and we're lamenting. Only a small fraction of a moment do we actually so-called enjoy the pleasures of the senses. Mainly we're just dreaming. It's called daydreaming. Mental speculation. Get it, and gone, and then lamentation. Hankering and lamenting. Prabhupada summarizes material life in these two words, hankering and lamenting. So ultimately, our material desires don't bring us the happiness that we imagine or that we hope for. Therefore, an intelligent person, he wants to transcend this. He wants liberation from these nasty material desires. They appear to be friendly, but actually they're our enemies. So we want to free ourselves from our attachments to this material world. Pumsha studya mituni bhavam tayor mito hridaya granti moho. The attraction between a man and a woman is the basic principle of material existence. Prabhupada says woman in Sanskrit, she's called shtri. Shtri means she who expands one's possessions unlimitedly. Now, gentlemen, we can't blame the ladies because we're the ones who want to enjoy the ladies. Right? The ladies want to be enjoyed, and the man, he's the Purusha, he wants to enjoy the woman. So when you get a woman and a woman gets a man, what happens? To facilitate that enjoyment, so many material facilities are required. A house and furniture, a kitchen, pots and pans, rugs, curtains, plates, spoons, this, that, house, and then children, it all expands. And thus one, Bhagavatam says, one becomes attached to one's own body, to one's wife, or to one's husband, to one's children. Of course, we're speaking in terms of grihamedes, not grihastras, because grihastras, the central focus is service to Guru and Krishna. But grihamedes, then it just increases and increases. So this is very entangling. And the end result is one is frustrated. Because material sense gratification cannot satisfy the soul within. Because the soul is by nature spiritual, but these objects of our affection, these material objects, they're material. And they can't give us the satisfaction. So we have to achieve moksha. We want to liberate ourselves from this suffering condition. This is the goal of every transcendentalist, to liberate ourselves from this situation. But it cannot be done in just one moment for the general class of people. That would be artificial. To artificially renounce something without proper purification means that you will return to that same material attachments. That's called vantashi. When one, in the renounced order of life, goes back to the same attachments which he previously left without sufficient knowledge, without sufficient purification, that is the most embarrassing situation. It's stated that a sannyasi who falls down into sense gratification, he dies a violent death. Of course, death is always violent, and we always have to leave this world, and it's all never a pleasant situation. But it is stated like that in Shastra, that a sannyasi who falls down, who leaves his ashram, and goes back to his wife and his children. Vantashi. Vantashi means that it's like you vomit and you take. That's vantashi. So it's not possible for most people to renounce these material desires immediately, although that is the goal. We have to do things gradually. We say in English, slow but steady wins the race. Like, you know, the famous story of the turtle and the hare. They started out racing, and the rabbit, he went so fast, shoom! And then he said, oh, I've got so much time, that stupid turtle's so slow. So he took a nap, a snap, as Prabhupada would say. A snap is a short nap. A nap's already pretty short. A nap is not 6 hours. A nap is half hour. But a snap is 10 minutes. So Prabhupada said, devotees can take snaps. We don't want to sleep during the day because that's not good. A snap. A little snap sometimes. In America, they call them power naps. They call them power naps. When I was there, I thought, what's a power nap? A power nap is a snap, which is a short nap. Anyway, so the rabbit, he took a little snap, but the turtle, he just very determined, he was going on like this. Slow but steady wins the race. He passed the rabbit, and he got almost to the finish line of the race, and the rabbit woke up. Oh my gosh. I slept too long, and the rabbit, boom, he ran. But it was too late, and that little turtle, boom, 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 and he won the race. So slow but steady wins the race. There's only a few examples we've seen in Vedic culture where one can renounce this world immediately. I know of a couple of examples. Even Prabhupada, when he was giving sannyas to some of his male disciples in the beginning, he admitted that there's a risk involved because they're young men and they may or may not have yet purified the heart or had enough realized knowledge to maintain their stage of renunciation. And we saw that in due course of time, many of the original sannyasis, they had trouble and they either left Krishna consciousness or went back to their family situation. Of course, just as Lord Chaitanya's Patita Pavana, he's very kind to the fallen conditioned souls. Prabhupada was very kind, and when one sannyasi was having trouble, Prabhupada said, all right, you just go back to your ashram, to the Grihastha ashram, and you continue with your devotional service there. If you can't fight the crocodile in the water, then the crocodile in the water, then you fight the crocodile on the land. Yeah, because an elephant sometimes is attacked by a crocodile on the lake, and he loses because that's not his natural place. His natural place is on the land, so the crocodile wins. But if he fights that vicious crocodile on the land, because the land is a natural place for the elephant can win the battle against the crocodile. So Prabhupada said the idea is to find that ashram which one can fight the crocodile of Maya most effectively. For some people it may be the sannyas ashram, for others it may be the grihastha ashram, or vanaprastha, for others it may be brahmachari. But one should be honest. Honesty is one of the 24 qualities of a devotee. One should be honest and serve the Lord in that ashram where one is most effective, because ultimately the purpose is to give pleasure to Krishna. So if we're struggling with mind and senses, we're not going to be render very palatable service to the Lord. But there are examples of those who do not have to go slow but steady, but they're few and far between. For example, Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya, of course, is a partial incarnation of Shiva. And he was ordered by the Lord, Shiva, because he's a very surrendered devotee, and a surrendered devotee will take up any service that the Lord or his representative request of him without hesitation, even though it may be very difficult. This is the sign of surrender, that one knows that by a difficult instruction, but along with the instruction from the spiritual master, the Lord, comes the ability to execute that instruction. One has that faith. That along with the instruction of my spiritual master, no matter how difficult it is, comes the ability to execute that instruction. This is surrender and this is faith. Shankaracharya, Shiva, he was ordered by the Lord. You appear in Kali Yuga and you preach the doctrine of monism or atheism. You deny the existence of the personality of Godhead. One might say, why the Lord would want to propagate such a philosophy if ultimately his desire is that we all return to his lotus feet? But there are those who have that tendency to want to ignore the Lord or forget the Lord. So Krishna says, sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matashmatir ginam apohanam cha. I am seated in the heart of every living entity, and from me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So no one is independent of God. We're all ultimately dependent upon God for everything, even the intelligence, so-called intelligence, to forget him or to deny him. We can't do anything independently. He gives us these Mayavad philosophies. If that's what you want, the Lord will reciprocate. All of them as they surrender or don't surrender, I reward them accordingly. So, anyway, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi is the tendency in Kali Yuga. So the Lord gave a appropriate philosophy which they could chew on. So Shiva, he appeared as Shankaracharya to teach this doctrine of Mayavad. And when he was just a little boy, he told his mata, "Mata, I want to renounce this world of illusion. I want to take the renounced order of life." "Hey, my son, you were only 5 years old. You can take sannyasis for those who are elderly, the last, very last stage of life, where one has realized through study of the Vedas, through hearing from the Guru, from personal experience, the temporary miserable nature of this world. You're just a boy, 5 years old. You can take sannyas when you, just before you die." Of course, naturally, everyone thinks in their mind the nature of this material world, the illusion is that we're all going to live to be a ripe old age, isn't it? Everyone's thinking, no one's performing spiritual life with the urgency that today may be my last day. Is anyone doing like that? As you were chanting your rounds this morning, you were thinking, let me really absorb myself in these holy names because this is my last session of japa. No, everyone's thinking, I will live, I'm 17, 18, 19, I'm 24, 25. I will live to be ripe old woman. Ripe old age. Old man. Everyone naturally thinks like that. Ahanyahani Bhutani. Yudhishthira says to Yamaraj, every day hundreds and millions of living entities are going to the kingdom of death, but I do not think I am going, therefore I am not making any plans. I'm not arranging things in such a way that I can become self-realized. I don't think I'm going to go. Or when Prahlad's friend said, after Prahlad's instructions to them to become serious about the human form of life and take up Krishna consciousness, they said, Prahlad, we'll take up Krishna consciousness when we're old. Now it's the time to play. But Prahlad Maharaj is a Mahajan. He's one of the 12 authorities in devotional service, spiritual knowledge. So he said, no, he said, old age means just before you die. You may be old now. Do not infants, Prabodhananda Saraswati says in his Vrindavan Mahimamrita, encouraging everyone to take shelter in Vrindavan, he says, do not infants also die? Run, my friend, run to Braj and take shelter of the beautiful divine couple, Sisi Radha and Krishna. Because we can't go necessarily to Braj, but in our hearts we can take shelter of Braj. Vrindavan is also a sense of mind, a sense of feeling of surrender to Radha and Krishna. Any place can be Vrindavan if we're fully surrendered to the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. So she said to her son, Shankacharya, you take sannyas. You can take sannyas when you're about ready, when you're almost dead. So the young boy, of course, he has to comply by his mother's wishes. So then he was swimming that afternoon out in the water, and one crocodile grabbed his cloth. So he took advantage of that difficult situation. He called out, Mata, Mata, you see, I'm about to die. One crocodile has grabbed my cloth. Can I take sannyas? Oh, yes, 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 you can. So in his heart, he renounced this world, and by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, the crocodile let go. And he came to the shore and he took the cloth of some old rejected cloth lying on the ground, a saffron cloth, and he wrapped that around. He made himself one ekadanda, one danda from the nearby bamboo. And he walked and he said, goodbye, Mata. He took sannyas. And Sri Ramanujacharya, when he was actually a householder, and his wife, they had couple of young children, and he was watching the lizards on the shelf, and they were playing, and one little baby lizard there, and that baby lizard fell off the shelf onto the ground, and Ramanuja was thinking how that lizard will survive, and suddenly one little fly came and landed right next to the mouth of that baby lizard. All the baby lizard had to do was stick his tongue out, boop, and he got the fly. So Ramanuja was thinking that, you know, yogik shemam bahamyam, for my devotee, I protect what he has and I provide whatever he lacks. If I leave my family, the Lord will maintain them. For the higher purpose of spreading Krishna consciousness, I will renounce my family life and I will take the renounced order of life, and Krishna will provide for them. I told this story to my wife when I was trying to convince her to allow me to take sannyas. She said, who will take care of me? And I said, Krishna. I said, so I convinced her with the story. Anyway, this is rare, that one can renounce the world at such a immature stage. Well, that wasn't immature because these were great nitya siddhas. Shiva and Ramanuja, they're great nitya siddha devotees, eternally liberated souls, so they come to the world to teach a lesson. So it's not possible to renounce immediately. So then what is the other alternative? Slow but steady wins the race. gradually one advances through the Brahmacharya ashram. In some cases, one can stay Brahmachari. Naishtiki Brahmachari. Naishtiki Brahmachari means that one is never, he doesn't necessarily take sannyas, but he remains celibate throughout his life. And the mind is very, intelligence is very sharp. I told you of that sadhu I met at Radhakund, who knew every verse, 18,000 verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'd say, chapter 4 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, verse 36. Boo! He'd go. Eighth canto, chapter 4, verse 20. Boo! 10th canto, chapter 2, verse 62. Wow. Maharaj, how have you done that? Ah, Naishtiki Brahmachari.
So, as long as I wrote in the last chapter of the diary, I don't know if you're getting that, probably you're not because you're not on email, but if you are, in chapter 16, we wrote about our spending time in Sri Vrindavan Dham this past year in order to get purification for taking up our responsibilities of preaching in Western countries. So we quoted one verse by Prabodhananda Saraswati that to the degree that one surrenders to the service of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to that degree one will qualify oneself for service to the lotus feet of Srimati Radhika in Braj. So I was in Vrindavan and I was, you know, chanting and hearing and reading and going to all the Lilashtan, all the places of Krishna's pastimes, and, you know, but the Vigyan wasn't coming. I'm spending several months in Braj, but I'm not getting any bhav. So then I read that verse in Vrindavan Mahimamrita by Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati, who gave us many valuable scriptures, Tunga Vidya in the spiritual world. To the degree that we surrender to Lord Chaitanya, which means surrendering to the service of Lord Chaitanya, which means preaching Krishna consciousness, to the degree that we preach Krishna consciousness, share the mercy of Lord Chaitanya with the fallen conditioned souls, to that degree that we do that, we qualify ourselves for service to Srimati Radharani in Vrindavan. So I have to leave. I've become somewhat purified, I hope, but to get that vijnan, to get that realized knowledge, to get that higher states of realization in Krishna consciousness. It's like sometimes you read Krishna book, you think it sounds like stories, like for children. But if you have vijnan, you realize these are not stories, this is lila, this is pastimes, Krishna's fan. You see, you understand very deeply. So for that I have to leave Braj. And I have to go to Malechadam, to the western countries. Yavanadesh, that would actually be Greece. The Greeks are called Yavanas. Malecha means those outside of the Vedic jurisdiction. I have to go there, and I have to preach Krishna consciousness. And by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I can enter into the mystery of the pastimes of Shishi Gandharvika Giridhari. Slow but sure wins the race. So back and forth like this. In Braj, chanting and hearing. In the west, preaching. Going back to Braj, hearing and chanting. In the west, preaching. This combination, hopefully this will bring the vijnan. So that vijnan, it comes in authorized ways. So also this process of gradual renunciation by taking up some sense gratification, because we can't do without it. We can't live with it. We can't live without it. We don't want it, but we can't live without it. All right, so you have a little some there, but regulated, not unrestricted. Unrestricted sense gratification is animalistic life. And gradually. And then at some vigyan, some realized stage, you can walk away from it just as, you know, you are not attracted to a piece of clod of earth. So what does this see? So the Karmakanda section of the Vedas deals with this sense gratification. Recommending, you know, different rituals, ritualistic sacrifices, generally for elevation to the heavenly planets. But it's all done under higher authority. And one realizes that the demigods are the ones who are warding that, because they're in charge of all those. For every material desire, there's a corresponding demigod. So those who are interested in that Karmakanda section of the Vedas, they practice all these rules and regulations and perform these ritualistic functions. And when they get smallpox, They pray to the goddess Sitala. Sitala has another meaning also, but I have one god sister called Sitala. But it has another meaning. It's some, I don't remember, but Sitala is also the goddess of smallpox. So when you get smallpox, you pray to the goddess Sitala to free you from that disease. So if you want a nice, handsome husband, right? Girls, they want a handsome husband. It'd be nice if he's intelligent. It's really good if he's got money. Most important is that he's Krishna conscious, of course. Yes. But, of course, when you're in love, everybody looks handsome. When you're covered by lust, everything looks, whole material world looks beautiful. And when you remove that lust from the heart, the whole material world is just like a faded a flower. It's lost its luster and faded and wilted by the end of night. When you're lusty, the whole world looks attractive. And when you lose that lust and you awaken your Krishna consciousness, the whole world looks very pale and insignificant. Anyway. So, and then you worship one expansion of Durga. What is her name? The gopis were worshipping? Goddess Katyayani. Katyayani. There's different expansions of Durga. Bhadra Kali. Ah, she had her tongue out. She's very ferocious. And then Katyayani is a more kind of mellow expansion of Durga. And she's in charge of giving... She's the wife of Shiva, who's a very exemplary husband. And she's a very exemplary wife, Shiva and Parvati. Householders take shelter of the many wonderful examples of grihastras in Vedic culture. So many examples of responsible Krishna conscious husbands and very chaste and loyal wives. So Shiva and Parvati are a very nice example. He's very Krishna conscious and she's also very Krishna conscious. They live a simple life, serving Krishna, Shankar, Shan. So one of her expansions is Katyayani. So the simple village girls of Braj, they worship Katyayani to get who is their husband? And Krishna. Like that. So, Sitala, Katyayani, what are some other examples of worshiping demigods for different... Well, if you want money, then you can worship... Or longevity of life, you can worship Lakshmi Devi. And there's so many examples of different demigods. Every dire desire has a corresponding. But as we were elaborated on in the class the day before yesterday, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that the ability of the demigods to award these benedictions, this power is ultimately coming from Krishna. So, fruit of activity. It is not the goal. That's actually why in this verse, Vasudeva para Veda, Vasudeva para Maka, Vasudeva para Yoga, Vasudeva para Kriya. If you study the purport carefully, Prabhupada speaks so much about how Krishna is the goal of knowledge, how Krishna is the goal of sacrifices, how Krishna is the goal of yoga. But this particular line, Vasudeva para Kriya, Prabhupada hardly mentions anything in there. And then Jnanam, Tapa, Dharmo, he mentions so much. But this verse, this line, Vasudeva para Kriya, there's maybe one or two sentences in there. Because, you know, we're not so much interested in fruitive activity. Ishvasramidam sarvam yatkinja yagatyam jagatena taktena bunjitaha marak magidaha kashushvidna. We take only what is necessary to keep the body and soul together. We're not interested in more than that. We need these material things. We're not naive, but, you know, we just take our allotted quota and we go on with our devotional service. So Prabhupada doesn't give too much credence to... He says ultimately that these things are awarded, that all fruitive activities are ultimately awarded by him only. In other words, the power to give these things is given by God. And if one is too much interested in these things as a devotee, material things and sense gratification, they act as obstacles in the path of devotional service. And the very nice... example of that, of course, is the yagyik brahmanas who were performing Vedic sacrifices in Vrindavan. And one day the cowherd boys, they got really hungry, because you can imagine how hungry they get. They're playing outside all day with Krishna, and Krishna's killing big demons, and they're so active, and they're running, and they came to Krishna Balaram one afternoon. They said, Krishna Balaram, we're so hungry. Our tummies are growling. Oh, hungry. So Krishna and Balaram, they're the personality of God, they could have really manifested, you know, the whole feast. But they wanted to teach one lesson. So they said, you go to the brahmanas, the gods on earth, and you ask them for some prasad. So Krishna said, but don't ask in my name, ask in Balaram's name. You ask the brahmanas for some food, some prasad, but don't mention me. Did you mention, you mentioned Balaram. So why did Krishna say that? Because Balaram, his father is Vasudev, and he's, Balaram's father is like king, so he's like Kshatriya, and Krishna is known as a Vaishya. So all of their brothers, they had two different fathers. So Krishna said, I'm a Vaishya, so the Brahmins aren't going to be very inclined to give to the Vaishya, but they'll give to Kshatriya. Balaram's from Kshatriya father. So you go and ask in the name of Balaram, because they'll be more inclined to give to a Kshatriya than a simple Vaishya. So the coward boys, they went, and they had the Brahmins, they were chanting all the... And Krishna Bhagavan said, what are you doing? Oh, we are chanting mantras. We are performing, lighting the sacrificial fire. We want to go to Shvargalok, to the heavenly planets, to enjoy the opulences there. So the boys said, well, you, okay, can we just interrupt for one moment? Krishna and Balaram are hungry, and we're also hungry. You can give some foodstuffs. And the brahmanas, they said, wow, we are, you know, we don't have time for this. We're very busy. Krishna and Balaram are just some boys. And they refused to give. So Prabhupada comments in Krishna book that although they were engaged in the ritualistic activities of the Vedas, they were not able to recognize Krishna and Balaram as the personality of Godhead because of their material desires. So we often talk about how material desires are obstacles to developing our love for Krishna. Well, here's another reason we consider material desires obstacles. We cannot recognize, we cannot have faith that Krishna is the personality of Godhead. One time Prabhupada was sitting with all the GBC members and he said, so do you really believe that Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna, and his eternal consort Radha are the personality of Godhead? This was 1971 when I just joined the movement, and I heard this story because there was about five or six men Prabhupada had chosen initially to be GBC members. And they were, GBC, they're going, and they went to Los Angeles. And just like Krishna doesn't like his devotees to be proud, the spiritual master doesn't want his disciples to become proud either of their minimal achievements in devotional service, which have only been accomplished by his mercy anyway. So to deflate any pride that may have been there in the heart of those first, they were only in the movement 3 or 4 years and they were GBCs all of a sudden. So Prabhupada looked around the table and he said, do you really believe that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead? And one of my godbrothers, who was a GBC man, he remembers that all of them kind of... Because if we really believed that Krishna was God, we would not hold on to anything. We would immediately achieve the stage of Atmaniveda. We'd give our whole heart and soul to Krishna and the process of devotional service. But because we're offensive, quote-unquote, because to maintain material desires, even after hearing so many instructions on the matter, is an offense to the holy name, which is our ultimate deliverer from this world of illusion to the lotus feet of Krishna. This is offensive. So because of these offenses, we're, you know, our faith is not fully blossomed in Krishna consciousness. So these brahmanas, because they were performing the karma kanda section of the Vedas for the purpose of sense gratification, although it was regulated and it was within the realm of Vedic injunction, it's not perfect. It's not... Even bhakti, even devotional service, can sometimes be mixed with material motives. Just because we're doing devotional service doesn't mean it's pure devotional service. So they were not karmis, unrestricted sense gratification. It was gradual. But because of those material desires, they could not recognize that Krishna and Balaram were the supreme personality of Godhead. So they said, we're too busy to give any food to your Krishna and your Balaram. So the cowherd boys were just dumbfounded. God is asking for your service and you don't want to render it? You little boys, you go away. So the boys went back to Krishna and Balaram and said, they don't want to give. Just like sometimes when we're preaching Krishna consciousness, this is such a wonderful movement with such wonderful philosophy and wonderful, everything is supposed at first class. We have the best song, Hare Krishna, we have the best food, prasadam, we have the best association devotees, we have the best god, Gandharva, we have the best book. People don't take. It's amazing. I'm always amazed that after the festival, everybody doesn't jump on the bus and come home with us. Sometimes people ask me the question, if the spiritual world is perfect, then why did we leave? And it's a hard question to answer sometimes. But I say, well, here you are at our program, and, you know, do you like the food? Oh, smakovite. And do you like the people, the devotees? Oh, they're wonderful. Do you like the philosophy? I mean, all my doubts have been destroyed. I like the colors, I like everything. So then why don't you stay with us? Well, I've got to go back and I'm going to... So, but we who are situated in Krishna consciousness, we can't understand how anyone could even leave this movement, even with all its problems. England, with all thy faults, I love thee. I can never imagine why anyone goes from this movement and joins, you know, some other camp. So wonderful. Krishna consciousness. So how, you know, the cowherd boys were just stunned, you know. And they went back and they told Krishna Balaram, they don't want to give. And again, Prabhupada reiterates in the purport, because of their material desires, they couldn't factually appreciate Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna said, all right, you go back and you ask the wives of the brahmanas. So the boys didn't even question. They just ran back, little pitter, pitter, little feet. They ran back. All the wives of the brahmanas were in a house, you know, cooking and arranging, helping their husbands, you know, prepare the offerings for the yajna to the demigods. So Krishna and Balaram came and they said, Matas, Krishna and Balaram are hungry. They like some prasad. And immediately the wives of the brahmanas said, oh yes, of course. And they began packaging and everything. And the wives of the brahmanas themselves, they stopped their service to their husbands, to their babies, and to the yajna to please the demigods. And with proper understanding, they took all that prasad and they carried it themselves to the place where Krishna and Balaram were. And Prabhupada mentions in the purport that only one of those wives of the brahmanas, and they were actually gopis because they're bhaj, so she couldn't go because of her, she was restricted from going by her family members. So out of feelings of separation from Krishna, purified her heart of any last tinge of whatever attachment must have been there, who can imagine? They're living in the same village as Krishna, they're seeing Krishna daily, I mean, but whatever was there, and then she attained her siddha swarup, her eternal service to the Lord. There's a similar pastime with the gopis, another set of gopis. But anyway, the wives, they went and they gave all that prasad to the Lord, and the Lord, they wanted to stay with Krishna. They said, now we've given up everything. They wanted to stay with Krishna, but Krishna requested, now you go back and you assist your husbands in their performance of their yajnas. So the wives went back, and when they came back, their husbands were astounded that, you know, they had actually the intelligence to understand that Krishna was God, and they were able to go and serve Krishna. Whereas because they had their material desires, they didn't have that spontaneous attraction and go, so they were lamenting. There's a famous verse, to hell with our Vedic sacrifices, to hell with our family situation, to hell with our studies, to hell with our brahminical qualities. After all that, we were not able to recognize that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas these simple village women, because of their devotion to Krishna, they achieved the highest perfection of life, personal service to the Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada says that generally women are considered less intelligent and not so pure and trustworthy. He said, but that can also be to an advantage, that they may be simple, not so intelligent, but they may take more easily to the spiritual path without any difficulty and become perfected in Krishna consciousness and go back to Godhead. So then the brahmanas, they said, well, now that we know Krishna is God, we should go to him immediately. But Kamsa is the king of this area, this region, and he has his spies everywhere. And if we leave to go see Krishna, maybe those spies will tell Kamsa and we'll get in trouble. Now, Prabhupada, based on the commentaries of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in the 10th canto, he compares their wives with the brahmanas. Now, by this time, they both know that Krishna is God. The wives always knew. They had spontaneous bhav devotion. But the brahmana, the men, they came to understand that Krishna was God by the mercy of their wives. Because you can only understand these deeper subject matters of Krishna consciousness through the association of advanced devotees. Sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sadhu shasukhoi, lavamatra, sadhu sangha, sadhu siddhi hoi. The initial steps we take in Krishna consciousness come by the mercy of the devotees. Our training in Krishna consciousness comes by the mercy, bhajana kriya comes by the mercy of devotees, and the perfected stages of Krishna consciousness also come by the mercy of devotees. Even when you become free of all material desires and you are on the level of initial stages of pure devotion, bhav, you have to leave this body and go to that planet in the universe where Krishna is performing his pastimes and take birth in the womb of a Braja Gopi to learn the intricacies of service which actually pleases Krishna. Anyabilasata sunyam jnana karma nabitam anukalena Krishna shilanam bhaktar uttama. That service to Krishna is done according to Krishna's desire, exactly how he likes it to be done. That you have to learn from Rasika Bhaktas, very advanced devotees who are in the same mood. If you pick a mood which you want to serve Krishna, and there's five rasas, you eventually, Vasudeva Savamiti, Samahatma Sudurla Baha, some stage of our existence by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, this will come to understand. And then you will follow in the footsteps of one of the residents of Braj, of Vrindavan. Krishna will make all the arrangements for his devotees. So at all stages, we require the association of devotees. Therefore, Prabhupada said, anyone who thinks he can become Krishna conscious, living outside the association of devotees, is living in an hallucination. And what does it mean to live in the association of devotees? It means Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Shmaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandham, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. Place like Mathura, Vrindavan, and associating with devotees. Any one of these, or combination of these, Rupa Goswami says, can bring about ecstatic symptoms even in the heart of a neophyte. They are so potent, these processes, these five processes we just mentioned, that any one of them or combination of them can arouse a symptom of ecstasy in the heart of a neophyte devotee. And especially this associating with devotees, it is so potent. Even if we're associating with like-minded devotees who are just beginning the path of devotional service. Devotees are always the object of Krishna's mercy. Where does Krishna bestow his mercy? Does he bestow his mercy upon the faithless, atheistic, antagonistic, inimical demons, or mundane personalities, or even just upon the innocent? Not necessarily. His mercy is bestowed like two pieces of parts of a magnet. They immediately come together. Devotees are always crying for Krishna's mercy, and Krishna cannot ignore the sincere appeal of his devotees, who are always chanting, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. So therefore, knowing that devotees are the object of Krishna's mercy to greater or lesser degrees, a very advanced devotee may have a lot of mercy. Therefore, you want the dust of his feet, the water that has washed his feet, the food that he has tasted. But even a neophyte devotee has also received Krishna's mercy. Otherwise, how can he detach himself from the objects of sense gratification of this world unless he has received some tiny portion of Krishna's mercy? So therefore, we always want the association of devotees. So the brahmanas, they were brahmanas. They were situated very nicely in the mode of goodness, but a mode of goodness is not enough. Mode of goodness, it's a stepping stone to transcendence, but it's still within the realm of material existence. One develops a sort of conditioning, everything's okay. So but they were able to transcend the mode of sattva to shuddha sattva by the association of the devotees, their wives. The good fortune was that they married women who were Krishna conscious. And due to their association, their shraddha, their faith in Krishna, gradually developed. Sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, savashastukoi, lavamatra, sadhu sangha, savasiddhi hoi. Even a moment's association with such devotees of the Lord. This is the means of advancing in Krishna consciousness. A devotee like Srila Prabhupada. And how do we associate with Srila Prabhupada? Physically, he may not be here, but he writes, he lives forever by his divine instructions. And through those instructions, his followers live with him. His immediate followers, and those who come after his immediate followers, his spiritual grandchildren, they have equal opportunity as his immediate disciples to get his mercy. How? By following his instructions, which are there in his books. Prabhupada said, my only complaint is my disciples, and we could say his grand disciples, don't read my books, because that is how we get Prabhupada's association. And through that association, we see that the brahmana, the men, they got some sense of bhakti. They got some understanding of bhakti to Krishna. But they didn't run to Krishna like their wives did, because they feared Kamsa. Whereas their wives were fully surrendered to Krishna, therefore they had no fear. Declared boldly, Arjuna, my devotee shall never perish. Because they had full faith in Krishna, they did not fear Kamsa or his soldiers or spies. Whereas the brahmana men, they got some idea now, oh, Krishna's God, but because they weren't fully surrendered, they didn't go to see Krishna. And this is the interesting to see different levels of devotees' realizations. That's why Lord Chaitanya said, of all the devotees of Krishna, the most exalted are the gopis, because they gave up everything for Krishna. Even their prestigious name and fame of being the wives of these cowherd men. They gave it all up. They gave up their families. Everything. They gave up everything. Atmanivedanam, fully dependent upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead's mercy. So these wives of the brahmanas, they were like that. But the brahmana men, because they didn't have full faith. Just like, why was Lord Srinadev so angry after he killed Hiranyakashipu? The demon was dead. The soldiers of the demon were dead. It's far away. But the lives of Narottam, Shiva.